Well, hello there. It's another day. I'm Jim Harrington.
And I am Bill Knight. Happy Wednesday, midway, hump day, halfway through the week. The news gets more interesting as the days go by.
It does. Hey, you know, I thought it would be interesting. First, have you seen the picture, Bill, the latest picture out of England? Royal portrait.
Yeah, the oil painting that seems to be all in red except for his face. His suit is red.
He looks like he's in hell.
Or he's the devil. But then again, you know, does the devil come in many different shapes and forms? Remember in Philadelphia when Joe did that stage appearance and everything was red?
Yeah, we should point out who we're talking about. We're talking about King Charles unveiled a royal portrait of himself, and to explain it, it doesn't do it justice. He pulls the cover off the painting, and literally, the only thing that you really can see is his face, and the rest, he's in a red outfit with a fire red background, total. And he looks like he's seriously standing in the fires of hell. And this is a royal portrait? I mean, you're thinking to yourself, what the heck is this guy thinking about? You know, is shock what he's trying to go after? You know, does he figure this will get him talking? Look at this. Watch this. And Bill, like you said, it looks like he's the devil.
But, you know, how many faces does the devil have?
Well, I mean, the devil supposedly has millions of faces. I mean, it can be.
Yeah.
Yep. Well.
And that's my point. That's why I mentioned, you know, the Joe Biden when he was on stage with the red backdrop and everything, and everyone said it looked demonic. You know, I think every once in a while the devil shows himself, and I think he shows himself for a reason, because he's got followers, and he wants them to know that he's there. And I think he wants to rile up the people that hate the devil.
Yeah. Well, all I can tell you is you got to see it. If you search online, go to your Google machine and
Google it.
Type in King Charles painting, you probably will find a link to it. You won't believe it. We'll just leave it at interesting, to say the least. Now, I have a little contest for you. Name this artist.
Well, is that Neil Young?
Nope.
Rocking in the Free World?
Nope.
Okay, I don't know.
Listen to him. He's really into it. It's good to know that your tax dollars are being used properly. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, by the way, it's not Anthony Blinken. It's Antony. I guess his parents couldn't afford the H. Took to the stage in Kyiv. That's right. He went over to the Ukraine and took to the stage, belting out Neil Young's Rockin' in the Free World. You were right about the song, Bill. At Barman Diktat, an underground cocktail bar and music venue, while Russian troops continue to advance into the country. So while they're rocking and a rolling, the Russians are stomping and a strolling. You know.
While the Russians are actually, let me pull that up here. They are right there on the border.
Yeah.
Of the Ukraine, what is it, Kharkiv or something like that?
Kharkiv,
they've got
yeah.
over. They've got, yeah, Putin has put 500,000 troops there because apparently, now, you know, I'm wondering, you know, Putin's a pretty smart guy, but, you know, I'm sitting there going, you got Blinken there inside of the Ukraine, and apparently all their reserves are up, and Putin's going, okay, time to press because we've got men to spare, and let's run their ammunitions out, and whatever reserves they got, do them. Would we put any kind of diplomat in harm's way if we thought that they were going to be in trouble? Would you put yourself in harm's way?
I mean, this is the U.S. Secretary of State. You would think that out of respect, not for the situation over there, but respect for the position in this country, he would do everything that he could to protect himself. You know, he's a key ingredient in our diplomatic policy. And here he is rocking on in a bar in Kyiv. Now, mind you, we should point out that they have shelled Kyiv. Kyiv is not immune to rocketry, you know, yet he's over there playing his guitar and entertaining the crowds, who, by the way...
So he feels safe.
Well, that's true. But, you know, they probably can't understand a word he's singing. So, and he could be a good guitarist. But come on. I mean, they're not there because he's Antony Blinken. If he was Antony Blinken, you know, auto mechanic, he wouldn't have a crowd listening to him playing Rockin' in the Free World, you know? It just wouldn't be. But he's
It's grunge. I mean, I've got an insight. I could get all kinds of, I can't get all kinds of intel, but I have an insight there.
Well, you had an inside where?
Well,
inside. Oh, okay. I know what you're saying. Don't touch that. Leave that alone, because he's saying, folks, is he has a connection in the deep state, and we'll leave it at that.
Yes, I do. Yeah, let's just say familiar.
Yeah. Speaking of the deep state, you like this transition? It's one of those mornings. This is George Stephanopoulos. He was on he's been on. They interview him like he's important now. You know, George Stephanopoulos. He's one of the anchors on the network, but he was talking about the deep state, and he was talking about he applauds the people in the deep state. Listen.
That was my favorite part about doing the book. I interviewed about 100 duty officers from the White House. And these are people that come, they're relatively young people who come from all over the government, the CIA, the DIA, Defense Department, military. And, you know, some people like to call those people the deep state.
Deep state.
Well, the big thing I learned doing this book is that the deep state is packed with patriots.
Yes.
People who go to work every single day on the front lines of the most intense crises the country faces, and do it to serve their country and to serve the presidency, not the president. They don't care about political parties. They're there to serve the presidency and the institution.
And they're doing it anonymously.
Absolutely. Exactly. As one of them told me, Mike Seeley said, you know, we serve in silence.
Yeah.
Oh, gag me.
Did he say a name there, Mike Seeley?
He said, we serve in silence at the end.
And then he said, yeah, Mike Seeley or something like that.
I didn't hear the...
he named a name, or maybe I misheard it. But yeah, you know, they're patriots. Well, you know what? I guess when you look back, since the left likes to throw out Hitler and Nazis, were Nazis not patriots to Hitler? That move.
These people that he's talking about, the deep state that he is so enthralled with, they work in silence. These people are not elected by the people. They're not put in office by the people. They are there from administration to administration, regardless of party. And they like to think of themselves as being the real control behind the power. And in many cases, they are. In many cases, they are.
They don't go away. You change the person in charge in the office. It might even be a party change, but they don't change.
And, you know, the thing about Stephanopoulos and him being so enthralled by the deep state, the young people in the deep state, this is really how he feels. He feels that they are so very important. You know, it's about serving the presidency, not the president, by the way. The presidency. No, George, this is why you were a half-baked advisor to a half-baked president. Okay, you have your priorities upside down. You really do. I mean, you don't serve the position. You serve the individual who is the president.
I think his book and the timing of his book is a hit piece on the right, because we talk about the deep state and people are starting to realize there is a deep state. There's a part of government that shouldn't be. So I think that book and what he came out to talk about, one specific thing there, is to change the narrative and all of a sudden qualify these people that are deep staters. No, they're really patriots that are, you know, the silent majority that's, they're patriots on our side fighting for us. They're not MAGA. You know, they're the communist. They're just trying to they're trying to rewrite the story.
You know, Stephanopoulos is an opportunist, has always been, by the way, an opportunist, because he was a hanger-on to Clinton and the people in that administration. He positioned himself and, you know, nudged his way into a position of authority and power in Clinton's war room, as they would call it. He was, and then he, when the time came for him to get a good, quote, civilian job at ABC, he seized it, and he made a lot of money. He's making a lot of money now, folks, over at the network. Now, I can tell you, having been in broadcasting for half of my life, that it historically has been a business that you apprentice, that you start out in smaller stations, you make all your mistakes, you move up, you get better, and you get better at your craft, you get better at what you do, and then if you're really successful, and by the way, if you're kind of lucky, you can make it to the big markets, the major markets, as they would call them, and you make a few bucks. You don't make a lot of money in the beginning of broadcasting, unless you join Stephanopoulos, where you go from the Clinton administration over to ABC, and they pay you $8 million or whatever it was, some phenomenal amount of money for what he's bringing to the table, which was nothing. You know, by the way, Bill, he was the beginning of this whole movement of hiring people from politics, from one political persuasion, and shoving them into the news media. You have all these people, Jen Psaki, right over at NBC. Now, she's going to come over and be a real neutral, objective host of a TV show. No. She's going to come over, and she's going to work her side of the street. And that's literally what she has done. And other people like Jen Psaki, even reporters, guys who, I think of guys who have worked over at CNN as street reporters who came from politics. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't approach a story from a neutral point of view if you are a partisan, you know. And that's exactly what the media has done. You know, I wanted to point this out, Bill. Maybe we talked about this a little bit yesterday, you and I on the phone, but I didn't mention it on the air yesterday. But I think it's worth noting. Because it shows a trend. I was with some of my favorite TV shows. I watch CSI Vegas. It's a procedural type thing. You know, they go and they swab the floor, and oh, look at, I got the DNA.
All the forensics.
It's kind of neat, and it hasn't changed in 25 years or 20 years because it was a spinoff from CSI. Same kind of formula. A traditional show, you know, procedural. Then you have Blue Bloods. Blue Bloods has been around for, this is the end of the 14th season, 14 years it's been around, and it is, there's such a formula to it, you can anticipate the next scene. It's that formatic, but it's a reliable show for the viewer. You know, when you watch Blue Bloods, you can sit down and you're not going to be thrown politics in your face, you're not going to be shown something which is going to make you feel uncomfortable as a viewer. Pardon? You're not going to be showing the woke stuff. Exactly right. Well, let me tell you what's happened, folks. CSI Vegas has good ratings. It's canceled. I'm serious. Blue Bloods has phenomenal ratings, has had phenomenal ratings, and makes the network millions of dollars. Has phenomenal ratings now. CBS decides to hell with the ratings. We're pulling the show. It's canceled.
Well, you know, that's the old thing, truth be damned. They don't want people to see. They don't want people to see what life should be or really is. They want to put a distorted truth out there. So whatever it's replaced with will, you know, be.
Well, you're exactly right. And let me give you an example, Bill, of a formula that they've messed with. I like NCIS, the original.
Well, they messed with that. The original was great, but they did put wokeism in it.
Oh, now if you watch NCIS Hawaii, they shoved down a same-sex relationship into the main theme of the program. you can be watching a pretty good mystery, right, in that show, but they will break away for a segment where the same-sex couple is, you know, flirting with each other and, you know, pawing with each other. And with all due respect, there was a time when television didn't get that way.
Why does it? Because it shapes the minds.
Exactly, Bill.
The thoughts of people. You know, not so much the older people, but the younger people, when they're still impressionable. They are programming future generations of what they think are people they control and people that they will hold their votes. I don't even think, and kind of a step out of this box for a second, we can get back into it, but I don't even think this election is very important because it is potentially the last election that we will ever see
absolutely
in our lifetime. And if you don't believe me, you ought to keep listening to the show because we can go into that. But the cards are on the table and they don't look good.
By the way, understand something. I don't care personally if you're married to a person of the same sex. I don't care whether you have a relationship with somebody of the same. That's between you and that person, okay? That's the thing. Here's the thing. It's between you and the person. It is what's hard to swallow with these shows is they shove it down your throat like they expect you to believe that this is normal. They're trying to normalize a lifestyle. And look at, like I said, it's between you and the person. It shouldn't be criminalized. It shouldn't be made into being something that it is. And it's just, if you love somebody, that's between you and that person, and that's how it should be. But I don't want to see it presented as a point of, they're exploiting, actually, when you think about it. The networks are exploiting your situation. If you're of the same, you know, of this belief, they're using this lifestyle for sensationalism. I would be bothered by that. You know, another thing, I'm on a roll today. I thought I couldn't talk today, Bill. I thought, I got an allergy and I don't feel great. Well, here I am. Another thing that bothers me is the way they're shooting commercials nowadays. Mm-hmm. I mean, first, seriously. Now follow me on this. I'm not trying to be,
lay it out there, okay. Jim, because I'll back it up. I already have a thought in all of this, but I'm just waiting.
You see, for example, a lot of mixed marriages on commercials, if you love somebody and mixed marriage, God bless you. It's the love that counts. Now, it is the love.
That's exactly.
You know, but here's the thing: it would irritate me a great deal if I was a minority and every time a handsome minority male got up in the morning and next to him is somebody of a different race, it's like saying that the person of his race isn't good enough for him to be with. I'm just saying they're doing it so much now. They're doing this so much. They're obvious to everybody who's watching. Okay, mm-hmm. And like everything else in the media and like everything else in television, there truly is no friggin' balance, you know? Yeah. They don't...
What they're saying...
Go ahead.
Yeah, what they're saying is black women are worthless. And they're saying white men are worthless.
And that would piss me off if I were a black man. I mean, I really would be upset. That is... Listen, you know...
Well, how do you think a black woman feels if...
That's exactly right. Excuse me.
You know, how do you, and you know, it says that white men are worthless too. And I'm like going, that should, well, you see, it doesn't piss me off because I know, and yeah, I'm white, but, you know, I'm not worthless. And neither is anybody listening, no matter what race or color you are or how you identify. You're not worthless. I don't believe in that kind of stuff, but I don't believe in the wokeism either.
That's it. It's the wokeism, Bill. They're using it as a tool, these companies.
We see it for what it is because we have grown and matured. But young people, and they're seeing it now. It's very obvious. You know, they're saying, oh, kids, you know, there's really, you know, really kids can identify as other things in this. They might have been born this way, but they're that way. Let's be honest. During your developmental years, your hormones, your everything, all the chemicals in your brain are all crashing together. And it takes a while for you to go through all these different thoughts.
Yep.
You know, am I this? Am I that? Whatever it is, because they're all aligning up. Let them do what they are going to do naturally. Now, when you're sitting there 18, all of a sudden you're going, you know, I've really always felt that I was a little bit different, and this is how I feel. Chances are then that's where you settled in. I don't really get into and preach or practice or say anything about anybody's identity, but I do say during these developmental years, let's not put the images out there and all of this stuff to support somebody's political agenda, because that's what it is to change these minds into believing. Because a lot of the kids now, you know, and this identity thing, it's been around for a while, but it's really come to focus here in the past couple of years. And now there are kids that have, you know, identified one way. They said, you know, I kind of don't want to be that way. And now I've made changes that I can't take back.
Well, that's true. That's very true. You know, I guess what bothers me out of the whole thing is they're using certain images, presenting for certain situations as tools to sell their products. Okay, they're not doing it out of the social consciousness of the company that's doing it. They're not doing it. The pharmaceutical company that's doing this commercial, right, doesn't give a damn about whether you're mixed marriage or whether you're, you know, or whether you're same sex, or they don't care.
They want one thing.
They want to sell a product.
Yeah, they want your money.
Yeah,
it's all about money. It's about power. It's about control. Those three things right there are all one tight knit little circle, and that's what it is. I'm sorry, there is no euphoric world where everything is free. Everything's
when
gonna
I
be
see
paradise.
A commercial personally with a good looking. Or, you know, a minority family or a minority couple, and they're together and they're happy and they're, you know, they're selling the product, right? I appreciate that more than when I see them play, you know, swapping nationalities, swapping races so that they can, you know, exploit a situation, if that makes sense. I could go on and on. The media, having been in it again, we have a different point of view than a lot of people. I should point out that I wasn't just a disc jockey in my career. I produced commercials. I have 9 Telly Awards that I'm staring at. I speak from the point of view also of a guy who's put together commercials, TV commercials. And I know I've had an interesting career in. People say, well, you couldn't figure out what you wanted to do.
You have talents, you do a lot of different things. You know, some people say, I got to focus, but, you know, I'm of the school, you throw it all out there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's exactly what I've done with my life, Bill. Anyway, the point is, we live in a difficult society. I feel sorry. Like you said, Bill, they're not making these commercials for me. They don't give a darn about what I think about their commercial. They're really shooting it for the young people who aren't thinking that seriously about what they're watching. They're trying to influence them subliminally, you know? It's just presenting a situation as being normal, and whoever is watching it, if they're 20, they're not really, you know, dissecting it like you and I would be dissecting the commercial, you know? It's interesting. We could go on and on. Maybe this is the topic for one of our weekend programs.
Oh, yeah.
Understand something before we end this, though. I'm not talking about being upset that there's mixed marriages or mixed couples. I think that's wonderful, too. I do appreciate having lived in a different world in part of my life. I do appreciate the fact that people are more accepting of situations right now. I think that's good for our world and our society. I think that so much was so much was, I don't know, we pigeonholed so much stuff when back in the 60s and the 70s and in the 50s. I mean, things that were considered verboten and wrong. Oh, that's awful. Now they're accepted as that. No big deal. You know, and that's the way I think that's good for our society. But I also think that, like a pendulum, sometimes the pendulum swings too far one way and swings too far the other way. There's a neutral area. There's a balanced area that we should try to stay in as a society. And we're having a hard time doing it right now. We have a look at the guy we have in the presidency. My God, this is the president of the United States. I was listening to an interview from England yesterday, and the guy was talking to an American, and he was saying, you know, I feel bad for you Americans, and I wonder how the heck you guys got in this position. This is an outsider talking about us. He said, look at you, look at what you've got in the presidency and in the administration. It's an embarrassment. We're embarrassed for you.
But you know what? But the outside of the world, you have to go outside of the country to see how we're perceived, because we are under the umbrella of propaganda. Yes, ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, you name it, you got it. They're all propaganda arms of the government. And if you don't believe it, now the government does send out a daily news update of their narrative of everything. And I'll be damned if you sat there and went from NBC to CBS to ABC, or in reverse order if you want to be alphabetical, and went to them, they all cover the same story, and it's verbatim. What does that tell you? The teacher just handed you your homework assignment with the answers that they want you to answer on it.
Yeah.
So you're reading the question and giving the answer. That is the narrative of the government.
There's no thought anymore, Bill, in the news department. No independent thought.
Well, yeah, but then again, well, the independent thought is the answer there, coming in a left editorial that is been prepared for you.
Yeah.
The basic news ought to be presented, but it's not. Like we talked about whatever it was, the story just a few minutes ago.
Well, I want
Stephanopoulos.
Yeah.
Let me just make the point. And he's talking about the different things, and these people in the deep state, they're really patriots. And I'm going, because he wrote a book. Well, you know, you can write a book in the course of, in less than an hour, actually. You can write a pretty big book in about 2 or 3 minutes with AI and tell it what you want it to say. But what I look at that story is, because they're worried about the deep state, this is, what do you call it, when you go out there to reshape the news and redirect it, it's damage control. It's damage control on the narrative. That's what that book is out there for. Jen Psaki has a book out that's damage control, because she's going, Joe never, when he was at that ceremony, looked at his watch because he was, you know.
What a liar.
Because then, you know, wait a minute, I can Google it. Well, there's the picture of him holding his hand there, one hand on the heart, the other one, he's sitting there looking at his watch because I'm too busy.
He did it several times.
Yes. So, but it's damage control so that they can talk about it in the media and say, oh, no, that never happened. Well,
the other thing I wanted to point out.
Damn my lion eyes.
The other thing I wanted to mention, by the way, we talked about Tony Blinken rocking on in a nightclub in Kyiv. What bothers me about that is the world is on fire in the Middle East. And we have people demonstrating for Gaza. We have people demonstrating against Gaza. We have riots on campuses, things like that. And you would think, I would think anyway, that the Secretary of State would be spending every waking moment of his life right now dealing with this situation. I'm talking about he wouldn't rest until he had a rock-solid plan in place. But this clown is over in Kyiv, playing rock and roll music on his guitar.
Jim, you're looking too hard and serious at this. I think that's a distraction. I mean, does he go on all of his meetings with his travel guitar? Or did he just say, hey, let's go out for a drink. Hey, there's a great pub. They got a band there. Maybe I can do a stand-in. I'm saying that was a publicity op, because who's going to argue with, you know, hey, rocking in the free world. Well, you know, you do and I do, because hey, great, he can play the guitar and he can get out there and jam with the best of them. Good for you, Anthony, is that it?
Anthony, yeah.
Good for you, Anthony. But, you know, I see a lot of people that can play, and a lot of them, you know, but they have their priorities in life. If that's your priority, to go have a drink and,
hey,
and go up solo.
Let me ask you a question. We have an ally in the Middle East, Israel, that's kind of being attacked from all corners of the world. And you would think that our Secretary of State would be at least standing with them, trying to change their mind on things, but at least showing his support. And he's nowhere near the Middle East. He's gone over there for a couple of quick visits, you know, and then he heads back to wherever he's going. Maybe he goes back to tune his guitar. This is a clown. With all due respect, if you listen, by the way, to Anthony talk about policy, this guy is an empty parking lot. He's a vacant lot. He's a numbskull in a position of authority, like most people, by the way, in the Biden administration. I have Karine Jean-Pierre yesterday.
Oh boy, here we go. Yeah,
I know. She was talking about Speaker Johnson, who made an appearance at the Trump trial.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and here's what she said.
Was it appropriate for Speaker Johnson to show up at the trial of the former president today?
So look, I can't speak to don't want to comment, obviously, as this is related to 2024 elections, and I can't speak to the speaker's schedule. That is something for him to decide on. And let's not forget, this is also connected to an independent judicial process, so going to be really mindful. And he makes his choices on what he does, with his business. That is his choice to be made. What I can speak to is obviously what the president is speaking to today as it relates to 301 tariffs. Making sure that he's protecting American workers, protecting American businesses, making sure that when we're allowed to compete in a fair way, we can thrive. And that's what you heard from this president. And what we've learned and we've seen from what the speaker is obviously leading in with congressional Republicans is that they want to cut Medicare. They want to cut they want to cut Social Security. They want to get rid of things that the American people truly, truly care about. And so our focus is going to continue to build an economy from the bottom up, the middle out. This is something that we can speak to. I think the contrast between what we do here and what Republicans, more broadly, Republicans in Congress do is, I think, couldn't be more stark.
Boy, can she tap dance. There was a writer named James Joyce, who was known for stream of consciousness writing. She's known for stream of consciousness talking. Whatever comes to her mind, she kind of says and throws in a lot of ums. And that kind of fills the bill for Karine Jean-Pierre. By the way, yes, you can mention what I was going to say about spilling the beans, so to speak. Go ahead. What did you think she did?
Well, the beans are is that she just admitted that the this is election interference. The witch hunt against Trump
it's
all election interference because she said that up front.
Yes,
and she identified it. So now you know the cat's out of the bag. But you know she's done some other things in there too. At the end, she's talking about that she couldn't help but take an opportunity to tell another lie, and that's about Medicare and Social Security. The Republicans want to take it away. No, they do not. Now, I will say this. Somewhere down the road, there's going to have to be amending of it. But, you know, over the years, if you go back and historically look, it has been the Democrats that have borrowed from Social Security. They've done everything. They've never repaid it back because they see it's a big pile of money. And when they see a pile of money, no matter what it's earmarked for, it could be for the rent, your food, and everything else, and your doctor bills. We'll pay it back. We need that money right now for our little projects and stuff. And you never get that money back. They've never paid it back. And, you know, but they'll blame it on everything else. They're blaming it on Republicans. But historically, if you can Google it too, and let's say you start washing the internet, Joe has repeatedly, you know, he's been how long in D.C.? 30-something years?
Oh, God. I mean, I think he opened the city up for Washington.
Yeah, yeah. He was there with George, you knew him personally. They went to school together, by the way.
I think they did, yes.
Yeah, but anyway, he has always been a proponent of doing away with Social Security. And he's in now his press secretary is saying, yeah, it's the right that wants to take it away and take away Medicare. No, that was dear old Joe, and he's the one. So just be aware of that.
Hey, by the way, folks, do not be fooled by this tariff attack on China from Biden. Biden is going to, he came out and he made a statement about how he's going to increase tariffs against China, against certain automobile parts and things like that, and he's going to be tough. By the way, it is the most obvious political stunt that I've seen in many, many years. I mean, this guy, all the polls have him fading away. I mean, literally fading. Day by day, his polls get worse. And so he figures, well, we'll put a tariff on Chinese stuff, and that'll do it. It worked for Trump, so... And Trump, by the way, his statement was too little, too late, which is true. But you know,
but here's what Joe is doing, though.
Here's what he should be doing, Bill. The number one issue right now in our country is the border. You would think if he was really, really smart, he would slam the door closed on the border, like effective today. He'd bring in the National Guard. He would secure the border lock solid. You couldn't get through. You mean jackrabbits couldn't get through, but...
I don't think that he can, because the people he's beholden to want that border open.
Yeah, well, I think you're right, but I'm talking about for election purposes. I'm talking about if you want to... He's doing the tariff thing with China to try to bolster his numbers, and I think he... The only way he can get some numbers bolstered if he would have come down solid on the border, but he won't, like you said.
The tariff thing, though... Trump was the one that introduced the tariffs in China.
Right.
And it was the left saying, oh, that you can't do that, and that'll never work. But factory after factory in China started shutting down, and they're looking and gearing towards coming back here. That was Trump that did that.
Right.
But Biden likes to steal everything, the economy and everything. So he's figuring that, you know, if we sit there and start doing the tariff thing, we can say it was a Biden initiative all along. Trump may have tried, but he didn't know what he was doing.
Understand something, though, Bill. If his numbers weren't as bad as they are, he wouldn't be touching tariffs. It's as simple as that. It is purely for politics, like everything this man does. His entire life is spent... I mean, remember what he said last week? He said last week, when I came into office, unemployment was at 9%, and he said it with a straight face, looking right into the camera. And, one of the few times where he was totally articulate, and we learned that unemployment when he got into office was 1.4%.
Yeah, even the left media is saying that he's lying about that. But you know, here's a revelation for the Democrats and the Republicans. You know, based on two things we've just mentioned here in the last 10 minutes. Number one. And James Carville the other day, because Carville talked about there's nothing they can do to stop Trump from growing. What you know? How big of a bowl of spaghetti do you have to throw against the wall to have a tantrum? And the answer is there's nothing you can do. There is nothing you can say that is going to change the mind of the right-leaning people or conservative-leaning people. We don't care what you say about Trump. We don't care about any of that. We want Trump back in, period. Now, with that said, go to Corrine, what she just said. Yes, you know, these attacks against Trump, you know, it's all political warfare, and it's based on the 2024 election. In other words, the Democrats don't care that it's obvious what they're doing, and they don't care what or how bad they got to be to get what they want. They don't care. They're going to do it.
I mean, so if they cared about what they were doing, they wouldn't be so obvious about these lawfare trials that they're putting President Trump through. I mean, everybody in the country.
They don't have a choice. They have to come out now and say what they're really up to.
You know, I guess Michael Cohen has some more time on the stand today. And
there could be a mistrial.
Well, here's what former Deputy Assistant Attorney General John Yoo explained why Michael Cohen's testimony is so disastrous that it could actually trigger a mistrial. This is John Yoo.
I agree with Jim. I don't think that the prosecution wanted to end with Michael Cohen. The problem for them is they went too far last week with the Stormy Daniels testimony, and they realize if they're going to bring more of the kind of witnesses that they had in mind, that it would really trigger a mistrial. So they're trying to get out fast while they can. The terrible thing is their worst witness, the person with all of the credibility issues, to the extent that he's been convicted of lying to both Congress and the special counsel. That's hard to do. Usually you only lie to one or the other, but he lied to both of them. That's a neat trick. This has got to be one of the worst witnesses that you could put. In fact, Jim and I were both at the Justice Department. I think he would share this view. We would never have authorized a prosecution like this that was so dependent on someone who's been convicted of federal crimes for lying. So I think if you're Trump, you leave them with this message at the end of the Cohen, at the end of Cohen's testimony, which is, did we cross the Rubicon? Did we go after a former president for the first time in the history of this republic in 235 years for this guy, for this kind of witness, for these kinds of charges? The other thing I would say is I think there's a good chance that this judge would have to dismiss these charges as not proven even beyond, before you put on a defense.
Former Deputy Attorney General John Yoo. And, you know, I think that the mistrial, logically, Bill, it should
make sense, but they won't do it.
They won't do it. Exactly right. It will not happen because they've got too much invested, the left does, in these trials. But think about their witnesses for a second. The two main witnesses, the two key people that they put on the stand, they bet the ranch on these people, was a porn star named Stormy Daniels who has flip-flopped with her story over the past 20 years, like a mackerel out of water, okay? She's blah, 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 she's back and forth. And then a convicted perjurer named Michael Cohen, who, if you asked him what time it was, you better check your own watch. That's how untrustworthy he is.
Yeah. I can just see the headlines both ways. You know, whether this thing goes down in flames, I can... And they're all innuendo puns, so I'm not even going to go there. You can do that yourself in your mind. If the Stormy, testimony stuff and everything goes down in flames, you can make up your own meme there. Cohen, same thing. If we win, or Trump wins this, and it's a mistrial, again, it doesn't matter how you do it. I mean, or they win, the narrative is really, it's comical what's going on in the news. This is what it's like. You're in a weird, twisted dream.
A lot of people figure that that the defense, Trump's lawyers, have looked at the situation. They've seen so much damage that has been caused by the prosecution's case that they don't want to mess things up. So a lot of people are saying, wait, the defense
Let
may
the
just
lay.
they may ask for a directed verdict from the judge, meaning, hey, Your Honor, how about just right there, tell us what the verdict is. Don't even go to the jury, but they won't present a defense, because anything they add to the mishmash hodgepodge of a prosecution, presentation, will only detract from the damage that the people have done. It's going to be an interesting outcome. I do think, by the way, the skeptic in me, though, really, I look at the situation. I think this outcome was planned before they stepped the first day in the courtroom.
Look, I can tell you right now, if it goes to the jury and they come back quickly and they go not guilty for Trump, and a unanimous decision, Mershon will have to sit there, and he's probably going to be rehearsed before that happens on the out you know, on the chance that it will happen, that he's going to have to come up with a narrative as to why he's going to overrule that decision and go ahead and find Trump guilty anyway. Because the Democrats got to have this win no matter what. They got to have it. They got to publicly show you them taking away Trump in shackles. And in a roundabout way, you know what, since it's preordained, I kind of hope it does go to the jury. They come back and say not guilty, and then he does what he's going to do, because the left doesn't care. So why not let them expose themselves? Because you think Trump's got numbers now? Oh, you wait until then. You think that people are, you know, a little bit uneasy now? Wait until you do it then. They have painted themselves into a corner, and, you know, they're sitting there with an angry crowd with pitchforks and torches that are getting ready to charge the gates, and I'm not talking about an insurrection, just so you know.
Well, it's interesting. When you look at the aerial photography from the rally this past weekend in Wildwood, New Jersey, I mean, from what I heard from people who were there, that you see this massive crowd in the video, and that's only a fraction of what was there, because they were out in the street. They were lined up on his motorcade way as he was coming in. These are people who weren't counted in the rally crowd. These are people who were just there to wave at the limousines going by to let him know that they support him. I mean, mm-hmm. it was a massive crowd.
Look, you know, it's a massive crowd, and if he's able to get back in, and I say if only because there are powers that be, that patriotic deep state that is going to do whatever they can to make sure, thank you, phone, going to make sure that they do whatever they can to keep him out of office. But if he gets in, I just don't know, and I hate to say it, I don't know that he's going to get to see that full term.
Well, there will be, in my opinion, I think right now, Bill, I think we don't know how many times there have been attempts on him, on his life. I've
hundreds
heard,
if not thousands.
I've heard there have been. See, they never advertise or promote attempts. They just keep that quiet. They don't want to encourage anything. They don't want to give anything away based upon their security. They keep that quiet. But I've heard that it's been numerous times already. So this guy has got guts. I mean, for him to get out of a limousine, walk over with pizzas to a fire hall and hand them out in the middle of Manhattan, you know, that takes a certain amount of courage, whether you think so or not. You know, the guy is he really believes in what he's doing, and he's putting himself on the line. You know, Biden's not doing that. Trust me. Biden, you know, he hopscotches to the Marine One, and then he flies off to Delaware every weekend where he contemplates his garage and maybe his old Corvette, and that's about it. And by the way, speaking of despicable things that the current administration has done, one of them, in my opinion, and again, I'm not a fan of Robert Kennedy's politics. I do admire the man. I think he's a good man. I just think he's misinformed on a lot of politics. But I do think he's also pretty smart on some other things. He's been very articulate about vaccines and COVID and things like that. But he's polling very well, mostly from the Democratic side. He's between 12 and 15% now, and it's driving the left nuts, the Biden administration. So what does Biden do? Biden, to punish him, continues to refuse to give him Secret Service protection. This is Robert Kennedy. This is what he said about this. Listen.
Hey, everybody. You might have heard that yet another intruder broke into my house this week and then returned to my house again shortly after the police released him. Last month, an armed gunman using falsified U.S. Marshal badges and phony federal ID and carrying an arsenal in his backpack tried to approach me at a speech in Los Angeles, a short distance from where my dad was assassinated. I don't want to make too big a deal of it, except that it highlights the need for Secret Service protection. Every presidential candidate since the 1970s who's asked for Secret Service protection has received it, including my uncle, Edward Kennedy, Walter Mondale, John Glenn, Gary Hart, George McGovern, Bill Clinton, George Bush, John Kerry, Mitt Romney, Bernie Sanders, and many, many others. They've all received early Secret Service protection. Barack Obama received protection almost 2 years before the election. However, President Biden has made the historic decision to deny me a Secret Service detail. I'm the only one in history whose request has ever been denied. I don't spend time worrying about my personal safety, but I do worry about the safety of my family and their sense of well-being, and about the safety of bystanders if there happens to be a more serious incident. I'm troubled mostly by the weaponization of federal law enforcement agencies to serve political agendas. It's not right for the president to provide protection for his family and political favorites while denying it to his political rivals. You kind of have a functioning democracy when candidates aren't safe. Elections and not assassinations are supposed to decide who takes office in America. In its threat assessment, the Secret Service concluded that I am at an elevated risk. The decision, therefore, to deny me protection was a naked political calculation. During his first week as Attorney General, my father assembled all the Department of Justice senior prosecutors to tell them that he would not tolerate any politicization of law enforcement. President Biden displays a bust of my father in the Oval Office, but he seems to have forgotten this critical tenet of American democracy. I'm reaching out to you today to help send a message to the Biden White House. The time has come for public pressure to make the White House do the right thing. That's why I'm asking you to sign a petition to President Biden calling on him to grant me Secret Service protection. Even if you don't support my candidacy, I ask you to sign this petition to protect me, to protect the public, and most of all, to protect our democracy. Thanks for taking time to do that.
I apologize for the quality of that audio, but it's what you get sometimes, you know. That being said, he has a real point. There's no reason in the world why this guy shouldn't be protected by the Secret Service.
Yeah, I mean, he should. Now, I don't know his where for all his wealth, but I know Trump has his own securities. They're trying to strip Trump of his Secret Service. But Trump has his own security for obvious reasons, I think as well. What would be interesting is Trump at one time looked at him. They were friends, and I guess they still are. They're combatants now.
Here's the problem they have with personal secrets, personal security. Yes, he does. Robert Kennedy does have his own security detail that he pays for. But the problem they have is when they go from state to state, sometimes they have problems, like, for example, carrying their weapons. Because they may only not be licensed to carry in certain states. You know, whereas the Secret Service, you can carry your weapon in any state, you know. There's issues with regard to logistics, never mind the fee. It cost them a lot of money for a good security detail. And the thing is, the guy is being penalized.
Him out of the election, and I see, you know, I've actually heard constituents, Democrats, that have sat there and said, well, you know, if we can't do it, get SEAL Team 6 to take out Trump. The fact that a voting American citizen is thinking that is cool, well, and they look at Kennedy. Now, some of them like Kennedy because, well, you know, he's a Kennedy and a Democrat, but the Democrats don't look at him as a Kennedy and a Democrat, not even his family. So I'm sitting there going, if they see him as a potential threat, would they have the same feeling on him?
I think they are ruthless. I think these people don't consider the long-term ramifications. All they think about in the Biden administration is the polls and winning the election, even if the candidate is absolutely inferior.
The left is always talking about, Joe, our democracy, it's your democracy, number one. It's all of our democracy, but the Democrats look like at it like it's their democracy. And this is why this attitude that's out there, it's not just winner take all, but it's beyond that.
Well, look at what they think. It's win at all costs. Look at what they think of us, Bill. They look what they think of people who believe in that philosophy of the Constitution.
This is the final countdown to the final showdown. When I say it's a final showdown, as far as these people on the left and that deep patriotic state is concerned, they are going to take this election at all cost. And this will be the last election then ever.
You think if Trump wins, there are going to be riots in the streets and stuff like that?
Absolutely, but not by us.
Right.
And I still think, you know, all we're doing with Trump, well, we're doing a lot with Trump. We're putting back in what was successful before because the numbers are growing. We want that back. We don't care what you say about him. He's just a man like anybody else. And he's got his sins, but he's got his good points. You know, we made that biblical analogy yesterday. You know, Jesus surrounded himself by fishermen and, you know, worldly fellows. We'll put it that way. But he's good. And, you know, past presidents that were Democrats were worldly fellows, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, whether you say they did great or not, they were. Biden is a different beast. The people that are running the country now are a different beast. And I have actually heard, and I have heard them say, there will never be another Republican in the White House. Well, that's kind of a falsehood there because there are Republicans that are players in the deep state. Yeah. I'm saying there is an element there that has it's an infection. It's like a cancer. And at some point in time, it cannot be cured. You know, I think if I were going to draw a picture of the devil,
I may believe that they believe that, Bill, but I also think that these are the same people who believe that lawfare was going to work. And I think right now they are in panic mode because it's done the reverse.
But, you know, we've said they're in panic mode before, and then they take another step and another step and another step.
Well, after lawfare, the other steps are very limited, Bill, and very deadly.
Well, okay. My walk the other day, and a very sweet lady, but she goes, "Well, you know, if presidents have immunity, then Biden needs to take out SEAL Team 6 on Trump, and do a hit." And I'm like, "Going, and
it is."
I don't know that
someone should explain to her that it is against the law, even for a president, to order the murder of an American citizen. I leave it at that, okay? Even though Obama did it, by the way, in the Middle East.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it has been done. So the immunity thing is a very precarious thing to be messing with. If he doesn't have immunity, that opens up Obama, it opens up Clinton, it opens up Hillary, believe it or not. You know, it opens up a lot of different people that have immunity. That right now, if you sit there and change, unless you're going to change it just for one person and then change it back.
Do you remember, moving right along quickly because I looked at the clock on the wall.
Yeah. It's,
do you remember John Ratzenberger?
Well, yeah.
John Ratzenberger was being interviewed on Fox News Digital, and he explained that many working class people support Trump because Trump knows how to build things and understands the importance of this. This is John Ratzenberger on Fox Digital.
Well, everybody seems really interested after I speak about it, and they come up and they tell, people usually tell their own stories because I talk about the lack of shop classes in high schools and middle schools, and that's where boys primarily used to learn the fundamentals of trades. I learned a lot about carpentry there. I went to college anyway, but afterwards I became a carpenter because of the fundamentals I learned there. And it just seems that people, I don't know whether it was the war on testosterone or the war on boys, but no more shop classes. So it's all gone away. Consequently, we're running out of people with those kind of skills. Now, years ago, I started a foundation called the Nuts, Bolts, and Thingamajigs Foundation. And to get more information of that, it's nbtfoundation.org. And we've got over 300 camps around the country now, summer camps teaching manufacturing skills to young people. And there's scholarships available, and it's in the hands of the Fabricators and Manufacturers Association now. You know, for years ago, I said, okay, here, you guys do it. You take it over. But that's was the beginnings of it, and it's starting to grow. That's the only thing I could think to do, because sometimes you want to shake people and say, what do you mean you don't know how to use a pair of pliers or vice grips or channel lock? So it's a mystery to me.
He will forever be Cliff Clavin.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you, he was great. He was great.
Really sound like him anymore because he's older. You can hear it in his voice. But, yeah, when you said John Ratzenberger, I'm going, oh, yeah, hey, there's Cliff.
He had a little
knowledge on everything there, you know.
There was a scene where Norm came into the bar one day, and he walks up, and Cliff says, how's it going, Norm? And he says, the world's treating me like a baby treats a diaper, which I always thought,
use it. I hear it all the time.
I use it all the time.
Cheers was a great show. Yeah, you know, I guess there's is the bar still there in Boston?
No, I don't think it ever was, Bill. There was a Cheers bar after the series was on, you know, that they kind of...
Oh, Cheers was popular everywhere. I worked down in the Carolinas at the time, and I knew the guys that owned Cheers and, you know, several other
you
bars.
You walked into Logan Airport back in the day, and one of the first things you saw was a mock Cheers bar. And, of course, they had models of Norm and Cliff at the end of the bar.
I think there's a novelty store in a, you know, store that sells memorabilia and stuff like that and show stuff that's called Cheers. It's in downtown Boston. I do believe that only from knowledge of doing some advertising.
Hey,
stuff
Bill,
there,
so. One more thing we should mention before we wrap this one up. This is a tragedy, folks. This is sad. Popular seafood chain Red Lobster.
Oh, yeah, they're closing.
They're closing their stores. They've closed nearly 127 locations in 27 states, according to reports. As of Tuesday, the Red Lobster website listed the affected locations as, quote, closed, according to a report on Fox. States include California, Florida, New York, Iowa, and Illinois, where they're among the stores being closed. But usually, I hate to say this, folks, usually it's waves. It comes in waves.
Well, here's what's interesting. I think I mentioned to you yesterday or the day before yesterday in conversation, they announced 50 stores.
Now I should have said 127, stores. Yeah.
Now it's 127. I said, yeah, and that list is going to grow because that always they come out with,
yep,
you know, one in each state, and then all of a sudden, boom, there it goes. You know, now trends are changing, and maybe some of that's COVID reflected or whatnot. I don't know. But
yeah,
our lives are changing right before our very eyes, and I think it's kind of nice to sit there and say, hey, let's go out and get, you want lobster? I want steak, or we'll get steak and lobster.
Yeah.
And, you know, which you can still do at other restaurants, but they're gone.
I can't imagine Red Lobster being closed because, I mean, every time I went in there, it seems like yesterday, but it's been several years, they were always busy.
That's why they closed now.
That's true. I stopped going.
A
big part of their profits just disappeared when I left. No, I know. It is sad. And, you know, the real tragedy is how many people lose their job. We forget about this. You know, we're not just talking about the waitresses and the front staff. We're talking about people who work in the kitchen
cooks.
And the cooks. Exactly right. They're stuck.
Well, think about this. You know, let's look at Red Lobster. Mm-hmm. Okay, you got a manager gone. You've got waitresses gone. You got cooks gone. You've got, you know, all the support people there. Now, well, okay, yeah, I get that. Well, you got vendors. Vendors,
sure,
that supply the meats, the drinks,
the
everything. you know, the condiments and everything, yeah. Not condoms, condiments.
Yes. And also, Bill,
trickles down.
When I looked into the, they own several different brands of restaurants, the company that owned Red Lobster. So you got to wonder what else is going to be closing soon. What other companies, what other nationally known restaurants are going to start shuttering their doors too, you know?
Well, you know, you're going to, I'd heard that Taco Bell might be in a little bit of trouble, and that's PepsiCo. You're going, PepsiCo? Wow. Yeah, Pepsi owns, one of the ways Pepsi couldn't beat Coke, but what they did do is they built up a conglomerate of different things where they have, well, they got chicken, Kentucky Fried Chicken. I think they had something to do with, for a while, the A&Ws. Well,
you know what we've lost in this area? I mean, we've, around where I live, Burger King's are closed. A lot of them.
Yeah, they're going.
It's like, what is the story? And, you know, folks, Biden keeps talking about how the economy's getting better and things are getting stronger. No.
Well, we got the highest... We got the highest employment rate, the lowest unemployment ever. Biden saved us on the runaway inflation caused by Trump. You know, it's still high, but he's bringing it down.
Yeah, right.
Lie. You've drank the Kool-Aid. How is it? Is it a little sour, a little taint?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like that, there was a stupid college movie one time where somebody tinkled in the punch bowl and the cop comes and drinks and goes, there's a little wang in that thing there. Well, the punch you're drinking, trust
That's
me.
That's true. Hey, and the other thing is, folks, last week, we were talking about how Dollar General or these dollar stores were starting to close down all over the country. You know, I mean, there are shopping malls that have shuttered, that have closed down in the past 3 or 4 years. This is not a healthy economic time in our country. And if go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, stocks, you know, even though you see the stock market up, they're not giving you the payoffs that real estate has. So big money is coming in, sucking up real estate. And now in towns all across America, people can't afford to buy and they can't afford the rent. So the homeless people, the homelessness is going to hit everyday John Q. Public, you or me. So if you own something, better make sure you can pay the taxes on it because the government, and Joe's trying to take that away with more taxes on the homeowner. That's what I'm saying. This election, it's very important. Life as you know it, life is always going to change. It revolves. But if we don't get it fixed now, you know, forget the handbasket. You're just going straight to hell.
And you know what, folks?
Joe opened the door.
I don't know how you feel about this, but it seemed like that yesterday, the 2024 election was like 2 years away.
It was here.
A long way off. It's like 5 months away now. And when you blink, it's going to be like a month away. It's going to go that quickly.
Let me tell you,
by the end of the summer, we're going to be on its doorstep.
And what happens if Biden wins? You know, what happens to you, Jim? What happens to me, you know, Bill? Well, podcast probably goes away. Could go away before that happens because Mr. Soros has what is he called his company? It's the Freedom something or other. But he is out there buying up, you know, media to control it. He's spent over $80 million buying up radio property in major markets, and I think he calls it Freedom Media or something like that. He's calling it, your freedom of speech, but you just can't speak on the right.
Yeah.
We're gonna gag you.
There may be a point where they pull the plug on us whether we want to or not. You know, I mean, even on sites that right now seem to be trusted sites, we don't know who's going to own them in the not-too-distant future. You know, that could all change. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Now, with that happy news, I think we should point out that if you want to hear our past shows or our most recent show, like, by the way, this show will be posted usually by 10:30 Eastern time. It's on our website. And you can just go there and listen to it, download it, whatever. It's the easiest way to hear the show. Trust me, if you don't see it mentioned on Facebook or you don't see it mentioned on some social media site, understand that about 10:30 in the morning Sometimes sooner, sometimes a little later, but around 10:30, the show is posted at www.itsanotherday.com, www.itsanotherday.com, or www.jimandbill.com. Either one of those websites will get you there. And I think, Bill, with that, we can put a fork in this one because it's done.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's only one thing left to say, and that is, wait, where's my notes? Oh, I remember, you know, sometimes that, you know, I forget things, but until I forget it again, hey, speak for yourself there. Hasta la vista. We're out of here, baby.
This is CRN America.